Welcome to another episode of the Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And today we have Phil Jones. Phil, you are a best-selling author of titles like Exactly What to Say, Exactly How to Sell, Exactly Where to Start. You are also the youngest recipient of the British Excellence in Sales and Marketing Award at the tender age of 14. You've reached millions across a variety of languages and people groups with your writings, trainings, presentations, and workshops. You are exactly like no one else. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Hey, great to be here. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, man, you are, you don't know this, but I've listened to and read your stuff, and I'm pretty sure as an author, you hear this all the time, but it seems like every time that I've picked up really pivotal work has been in an inflection point in my life. And yours was no different when I first started my business. So I am extremely honored to be having this conversation with you today also.
Well, let's hope he doesn't disappoint, right?
I'm sure you'll be fine, my friend. So let's, I think before we get started, and we were chopping up about this just before, kind of tell me how 2020 was for you.
Okay.
Pandemic year. You travel to make a living, a part of your living, yeah. And like you had to adjust, you had to change your perspective. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for asking that question. Very few people have asked me about my 2020. They've asked me how I can help them with theirs, but they haven't asked me too much about mine. 2020 was a riot, like it was a crazy ride. And we were lined up January, February, looking like one of the most prolific years of my career up until right now. I had my schedule was ram jammed with speaking events. I was picking up some of the bigger arena pieces that I was looking for. I was picking up fees that were nearly double what I had been in previous years. It was looking rather rosy. And in the month of February, I was on a big tour in Australia with a little company called Volkswagen. I'm doing a ton of work with those guys, and all this stuff starts bubbling up. And we come back from there. I get back to my home in New York, and I'm reading the press, and I'm thinking, this is going to be interesting. What to do? And we have homes, or we had homes in New York City and back in the countryside in the UK, just outside London. And I'm like, I tell you what I think we should do is before everything goes crazy, let me pick up me, my wife, and we've got young twin girls. So let's just go to our place in the country. Let's go chill for a month or so while the dust settles on all of this. So we took a flight like March the 10th or something. And it was the last flight out of Newark International Airport that since has happened that used the United Polaris lounge. Like from an hour after we left that lounge hasn't opened again.
Wow.
So we left and we had a flight. We got into the UK and we thought we'd stay for a month. And 5 months later, we were still there. In what is our vacation home that was tight and crammed, et cetera. And I'm trying to support clients from a distance with, webinars, seminars, get straight to the front line, helping people that are in chaos mode to say, how do I navigate through crisis? And we're figuring, well, hold on. If I'm in the business of helping people navigate change, well, the only thing I can do is to help the businesses that are close to me navigate change, right? Forget about my business. Let's make my business about everybody else's business over this period, which is what I've always done. Is my business has never existed without the success stories of the others. So we dove into that and then progressively was back in rookie mode. It was like, okay, so now I've got to learn to engage with people through a camera lens. Now I've got to understand about graphics and microphones and plugins, and I can't hire anybody. I can't be like, okay, well, how do I throw money at this thing, get some smart people in the room, come hook my space up and everything's rocking. It was like, I got nada, nothing. So it was really quite interesting to be at a point in career where I thought I was toning down. I thought like I was going to have a couple of heyday years, a couple of victory laps, bank some money, start thinking more about investments, settling down at the beach. And it completely went back to being like I was in the hustle mode of my early years.
Wow.
And just ground it out through 2020. And then we've just finished our year-end accounts. We're recording this now, January 2021. And my 2020 was my best financial year ever.
Wow.
And wow. Don, I worked for it. Like there's, yeah. There's no denying that, you know, I was expecting big numbers for the year, but I wasn't expecting to get there the way that I got there. But the route was completely different. And we still had a very, very commercially successful year. And the result of which is when everybody else was wondering what was happening, we got busy. That now means my start line in January 2021 means that more and more people are seeing me as a go-to trusted source for virtual events to help them understand how to educate sales teams around selling in a new environment, to help people understand how they can get an edge and get ahead when the game has changed. And I'm like, okay, I didn't plan for that. But now my business is demonstrably different. I have a studio here in St. Petersburg. We moved out of our place in New York. We've done two transatlantic moves over the last 12 months and built purpose-built studio sites, both sides of the Atlantic, and moved house twice. We're like, none of that was in plan.
Wow. Well, I mean, I think not knowing that story at all. So if the audience is thinking this is scripted, it's totally not scripted. I just asked you that question because I was genuinely interested about how you're doing. And I think it's a perfect segue into what our topic is about. What are the best marketing tools? Because there are financial professionals sitting probably on both sides of the Atlantic. I know about my peers on this side that are just like sitting on their hands, like, what am I going to do? I can't go to a country club and play golf. I can't, do dinner seminars. I can't do this stuff. And so I think what we're going to talk about today is going to be super duper helpful to, if not, shot in the arm, but definitely kick in the pants, maybe for some people in what they're doing. So I want to talk about, first of all, because I think the very first book of yours that I read or listened to on Audible was Exactly What to Say. Where did the concept of exactly what to fill in the blank come from?
Okay. I like your questions. You asked me different stuff. Thank you. I'll try and do the short version of the very long story. I was in a mastermind group with some speaker, author, trainer friends of mine, say back in 2009. And we were talking about book writing and we were talking about what could be done. And everybody was saying how hard it is to get published. And this was at the infamy of the self-publishing channels as well, where you could, in effect, back yourself as opposed to wait for a major publisher to back you. And I let my big mouth get me into trouble during that mastermind group by saying, look, it isn't that hard. If you really wanted to, you could turn a book around in like 48 hours or in 7 days, it would be nothing. And obviously you stick a load of egos in a room around each other and 30 minutes later, I'm promising to be able to prove it. So I took a training course that I delivered for a group of customer service reps in a telecommunications company that was a sales for non-salespeople training that had a 2-page PDF called The 17 Magic Words for Influence and Impact. And I just turned it into a book. Like I just padded it out, put some stuff in it. And it was more of a pamphlet than a book. Mm-hmm. And it box ticked and it was like, ta-da, we did the book. And I put some marketing behind it and we put some attention to it when we launched. And it was almost, like you go to a great restaurant and nobody asked for it, but at the end of the meal, they come and bring you a little extra, a little dessert, a little sweet or something. You're like, that's nice. That's where Magic Words as a book sat within my business system. It was giveaway at the back of events. I'd use it if I was speaking at, like the big exhibitions where you're trying to get an army of people around you in lead gen and all those things. So I'd use it there. And interestingly enough, we sold 240,000 copies of the thing.
Interesting, isn't that?
Right. And I'm like, okay, I got something here. And I would run with it. It was part of my ecosystem for quite some time, but I was never proud of it. Like I didn't do it right. I just did it.
Yeah.
You better get something done. 2016, 2017, through some life changes, my fiance at the time, now wife, went through some family circumstances that meant it made more sense for us to be back in the US. So we decided to relocate. And my career was a national career, like an international career. I had business in the US, but not solid generic business in the US that would keep me busy 52 weeks a year. I didn't want to move to the US and then be flying around the world from here. I thought I could probably build a North America business, but I need a signature move. I need something that gives me a launch pad. So I decided to write a new book. and use that as almost my passport to the US speaking industry, to win attention of bureaus, to get, you know, a talk trigger into some of my larger corporate accounts that had big footprints in the US. And I was going to write a brand new book, and I thought, you idiot. Like, why write a brand new book when you've got like your greatest hit that you underperformed, that you've got it like in a dodgy demo tape recorded in a basement? Why don't you just do the job properly? So exactly what to say was born out of a regeneration of Magic Words. What was interesting is when I originally commissioned the publishing of it, it was going to be called Magic Words again. We were just going to re-release it. Mm. Yet there's a guy called Tim David that's produced a book in the US called Magic Words.
Mm.
In 2012, 2013, okay, I had published it in 2009, but as far as the US market was concerned, Magic Words is Tim David. And guess what? He's a magician. Like, he should have that more than I should have that. So I thought, rather than get into a tackle with it, is why don't I just rename it? And I'd done a series of seminars in a particular niche of industry where I delivered Magic Words content, and the seminars were called Exactly What to Say. Wow. So I thought that'll do, and then dropped the other line to the subtitle and launched it. The book went gangbuster from the start. Big major new, I own my publishing rights for Exactly What to Say in its entirety. Major New York publisher came to me asking to buy the rights off me 3 weeks after it had launched and said, can we cull its launch, bring it back into us? We'll make it go even bigger, yada, yada, yada. And I said, no, but we renegotiated that deal to do another book. Now, you can't launch a second book like 6 months after you've just launched the first one. I mean, you're like chasing two rabbits.
Yeah.
So that's where Exactly How to Sell came from, is I can't launch two books, but I can launch one book and a follower, and then I can play this out like a series. So it wasn't masterminded in the past. It was smart decisions, all of the change-making gateways that appear along the way. And here we are, is now I own the word Exactly. you have to send me 10 cents.
I love that. You there's so many rabbit trails that go down and hop down that, but I'm really excited because you bring up a couple of good points that I think that I want to iterate on. I think the first is the new things that come from old ideas, right? Like, I don't know that too many of financial professionals think of themselves as servant leaders that are really architects to take our clients to another level,
right?
Experiencing life. And, you know, so let me take a page for that while I'm on this tangent. I just recently asked all my clients, I was like, give me your 30 goals, you know, hard, easy, medium, long-term, short-term. I don't really care. They don't have to even do with finance. And I want you to give me those goals so I can serve as accountability as we run those up against your financial plan. And it's been amazing the type of conversations I've had from people. And this whole, you know, new things coming from old ideas, because we don't dream. We don't dream as much as we used to when we were kids. Life hits us and things happen. And I think some of my audience needs to hear that and hear what you're saying so they can connect the dots about what they're doing and the role that they have.
Well, constraints fuel creativity.
Mm.
So we lived in a period of time where you say, okay, 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, everything is going up, right? Everything's good. And people think it's easier to win business when the market's doing this. It's not. You might get people to be able to, you know, sign a piece of paper or commit to a new plan with you, but they're just like, yeah, whatever. It's like, you know, the moments when you're rolling with cash and you're like, I'll buy you a drink. You're not committed to any of those relationships. You're just like, I'm good to transact in the moment when everything's good. But when things get tough, you start to make smarter decisions, and you have to make smarter decisions with the people that you trust. And you have to calculate those decisions more effectively. So if you're a good financial advisor, you're a good financial planner, these times right now, these are your moments. These are your moments to land grab. These are your moments to steal market share. These are your moments to be able to build everlasting relationships with your clients. And if you're sitting, wishing, waiting, hoping, and praying for them to call you, then you might be the problem, not the market, right? Like, that is probably the truth. So it's starting to say, where is the gift in the crisis? Mm-hmm. How does this give me an opportunity? And that opportunity isn't yours. It's your opportunity to shine for others. And that's what you were lacking in the past, because everybody was shining by themselves. They didn't need you. Now, all of a sudden, they're losing their glow you've got a chance to be able to get in there and buff that up and start to be able to redefine a plan. And I think that's where opportunity lies on the playing field, right? In the arena. You've got to be prepared to jump down into the arena and deal with the mess as it comes up and trust yourself that you can overcome all the things that you're going to bump into, but you don't even know what they all are yet.
No, I couldn't agree anymore. You're preaching. I think one of the things I want you to unpack, because you're such a master at this, is kind of walking the listener that is starting to say, okay, Dom, okay, Phil, I'm getting this. Like, what do I need to do next? Break down the difference between marketing and sales, if you even feel there. I strongly feel there is one, and I think there's an order that those need to go in, because people need to think about developing personal brands for themselves and not relying on, like, even what you said earlier, you know, like resting on your laurels, going to kind of chill out. You know, I got the Merrill Lynch name behind me. I got the Fidelity name behind me.
Right.
People don't care. They want to know who is Phil. They want to know who is Dom. So talk about that difference.
Okay. We'll talk personal brand on this in a second. And I think I'm also going to talk differently about personal brand, marketing, and sales. I think they have three separate things. And firstly, let's deal with the difference between sales and marketing. Okay. Is what marketing is about is getting bees around a honeypot. You're trying to tell a story that the honey is so sweet and you're hoping you get some bees to show up, which is great if you're looking for hundreds or thousands of opportunities. The trouble is you can't control what bees show up. And everybody listening right now is asking yourself this question is have you ever had a customer or a client you wish you didn't have? Answer that question is probably hell yes. Now, what salespeople do by alternative is they choose their customers. What most people fail to understand, particularly in a business like mine, yours, or anybody who's listening, is we have capacity. And people play like they have infinite resource. What that means, if you think like a salesperson, then what you can do is you can decide, well, what do I want my book of business to look like? I want 6 of these, 12 of these, 42 of these, and 7 of these. And then you can go get it. Instead of, hey, I'm in the world of financial advice. Please pick me. I'm good. I'm nice. I can help with mortgages. I can help with pensions. I can help with investments, insurances. Give me what you got, because I'm the guy, right? Like, you're more likely to trip over somebody else's waist than you are to find the people you really want to do business with. You're going to find the person that somebody else that didn't want to work with anymore. That's what happens is if you focus your efforts on marketing. The reason personal brand is so important, though, in this whole story, is if I decide I want to work with 6 of these, 12 of these, 42 of these, and 7 of these, and then I get myself into that conversation, I win a lead, they download a form, they put themselves into a conversation with me, and they say, who's this guy? And the story don't add up. You don't get a gig. So the personal brand piece is about putting all your pegs in a board to say that when somebody is saying, why you, as opposed to the other person, do you win the race? See, I think the financial advice world is so similar to the speaking business. Getting yourself in the game is actually pretty easy. Pass some criteria, get some experience, get your kind of key assets all in place. Getting yourself on the podium is where the money's made. So it's that final 5%. Now, if you get into the final three every time and come second and third, it's not a particularly good career. But if you get into the final three every time and that you come out on top more often than you're behind, guess what? That's where the real opportunity lies. Yeah. So the reason personal brand is so important is when you're in that final third race, do you look like the right choice? Do the pegs in the board add up? If I'm doing 5-bar gates of saying why this gal as opposed to this guy, it's like, well, because she writes for this. And have you seen her website? It's killer. Look at her testimonials and look what people have said about her. Man, I loved her response to that thing that just happened in the markets that way around. Right? And we're building this whole thing out and we're hitting what I would call the show me that you know me button. Show me you understand. And in games like the speaking business and financial advice, before people look for greatness, they look for certainty. You know, I don't want you to be awesome. What I first want you to do is to not mess this up. Once you prove to me you're not going to mess this up, we can then work on awesome.
Yeah.
But actually, my primary buying decision towards a trusted advisor in any given industry is show me you won't mess this up. Meeting planners are the same in my game. Like, they don't want a rock star that two-thirds of the audience are going to love and a third are going to hate. They want, you're going to show up on time. Do you understand how the kit works? Are you going to play your role in the overall picture, or are you going to try and steal the show? And that requires a level of maturity. And your personal brand can tell that maturity story and leave your ego checked at home.
No, you bring up a lot of points and give me a lot of rabbit trails once again. You're setting this up masterfully. I think... What order does, talk about the importance of storytelling with that, because what you're talking about is a story. It's a narrative that you're presenting of yourself and showing up a certain way, your level of self-awareness, you know, all this kind of stuff. Talk about what the place of storytelling in that and how good a storyteller you need to be.
Sure. Well, okay. Let's give a very concise version, is that a story will always sell, whereas a fact will only tell. I don't give a damn that you have access to the whole of the market. I don't give a damn that you've been doing it for 22 years. I don't care that you have a beautiful office in the greater Atlanta area or whatever. I don't care about any of that stuff. It is, tell me the story that talks towards the fact that you get me and my work. So if you're writing a story, and we're all writing a story every time we speak to somebody, every time we write web copy, every time we write an email newsletter, every time we put a social post out, first question to ask yourself is, who is the hero? And this is my take on some of Donald Miller's work from building a story brand. But you've got to be asking yourself is, who is the hero of the story? Here's the mistake that most people make in storytelling is, are you familiar with, say, like the Harry Potter books and movies?
Yes.
See, what everybody wants to be in their story is they want to be Harry Potter. They want to be the name on the cover, the star of the show, the one that everybody is talking about. The job is to remember that Harry Potter should be the client.
Absolutely.
And you hold the role of Dumbledore.
You're right.
And your product set is the wand. Once you can see that that is the story you're trying to tell, your storytelling abilities go through the roof. And this means through all of your communications, you've got to get clear on who are the people you're looking to help.
Yep.
So why those people? And what are the results that you've achieved for people like that in the past? And how do you propose to use that experience to create results for more people like that in the future?
No, you're hitting the nail on the head. It's like the what's in it for me, no matter how you want to spill it, that's what people care about. What is in it for me? Like, why am I going to buy exactly what to say or exactly right. What to sell? You know,
and what is the promise in that as well?
Yeah.
And again, from a financial advisor's point of view, is that's what I'm looking for, right? If I'm choosing a trusted advisor for anything in my world, is I want to know what your promise is. And if your promise is you've always got my back, your promise is you're going to make me one step ahead of the market, your promise is that when times change, that I'm going to be on your call list, you're not going to be on mine. Right?
Yeah.
Is that's the stuff that matters to me, but that isn't necessarily the stuff that matters to other people.
Yeah, so talk about that, because you haven't used this word yet, but in our industry, we'll call it a niche or a specialization. How important do you think it is to carve out one of those specializations or niches for financial professionals? I would imagine it speeds the curve. Of course, it won't be linear, but what are your thoughts there?
I think it's important to give consideration because of this point I made earlier on, is that we have capacity. And it's easier to become an expert than it is to become a generalist. I mean, think quite literally, if you wanted to open a tin or a can of beans, what utensil would you look for?
Can opener.
Right? Not a Swiss Army knife. And that's why having, you know, being the guy or the girl in any given moment is so valuable, because you want to be the first thing that somebody thinks of in that given moment. The mistake that many people make, though, when niching down, is they think they should be a niche in a product. Right? Or, you know, a deep expert in a certain type of planning. The trouble is very few people are looking for that. What you're better to niche in is a certain type of person.
Ooh, I love that. Psychographic. I love it.
Right. Yeah. Like if you said that you're a financial advisor for Premier League soccer players, well, that's pretty easy, right? Anytime a Premier League soccer player shows up and says, who's your financial advisor? It's like you need a financial advisor for Premier League soccer players. And the understanding then is they're good at working with people who are younger in their life rather than older in their life. They're looking at long-term planning. They think about diverse options. They're not necessarily thinking about retirement planning at the age of 65. They're looking about creating multiple income streams for people in their 40s, right? They don't have to say any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because they've said, I specialize in financial planning for professional soccer players. So I would get your focus on your people. Your people could be, I specialize on financial planning for everybody who lives in 960 Union Street, a development of, you know, a condo development of so-and-so workers with 650 people. If that was your specialist and you only needed 80 clients to crush it, why not have them all in the same building?
Helps with overhead and a lot of other things too.
Happens, right? When people are going through the dorm and they're having small talk, etc. And they're like, hey, you work with Dom? Yeah, I work with Dom. Isn't Dom awesome? Like all of a sudden this ripples out.
Yeah.
So you can be playful with niche in a way that becomes quite empowering.
Yeah.
And I'd even do this down to the chance of people to be able to add their yes and to their personal brand.
Okay.
So I don't want a financial planner as a financial planner as a financial planner. But I wouldn't mind a financial planner who loves bourbon.
I get it. No.
Right?
Yeah.
It is if you love bourbon and you know that some of the people that you might like to work with also like bourbon and that they, you know, operate in spending more than $12 on a bottle, you can start to bring that into your brand. And whether that's, you know, jazz guitar, whether that's horticulture, whether that's the theater, whether that's like if you can add a yes and to your personal brand, make that part of your niche again. And now all of a sudden you attract more of the right people. If I knew every time we were discussing my financial plan, we're also going to say, hey, well, you've been drinking recently. I want to show up to my meetings again. What happens every time I leave the meeting and I want to have a conversation about another buddy about bourbon? I'm like, hey, I was chatting with my boy Dom.
Yeah.
Right? It forces the conversations we're looking to be able to have. And what people think that people talk about for personal brands, they think that people talk about your brilliance and your competency in your role.
You're right.
They don't. That's table stakes. That gets you in the game. It doesn't get you on the podium. The stuff that gets you in the podium is your yes and. So make that part of your personal brand and you're in a different way.
No, you remind me of a story I read about Tesla that, you know, they recently did the whiskey or the alcohol. They've added that to their brand. And the bottle sold out like this. And I think you underscore an important point about the yes and. I love that because I always say, as a financial planner, my clients are not looking for me to bring them more information. Like the world is awash with information. They don't need more of that. They need me to help them with the complex, bring it down to the simple. And I say financial planning is no more than your finite resources like time and money being spread across unlimited choices.
Right.
So I'm the facilitator to that. I'm the Dumbledore, right?
Right. And no, Dumbledore never told Harry Potter what to do. He just asked him to consider some different things, asked some questions of him he wasn't prepared to ask himself, gave him some confidence to perhaps go down some paths that he might not have gone down on his own. But there was no, here's what you should do, boy.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, you underscore something that I think is lost on a lot of financial professionals is that when I come to a Phil Jones and I'm going to help you get to the next level with your life and your money, you're an expert in what you do. Like you're super competent, probably, you know, one of the best top of your field. There's no reason for me to like start dumbing down the language or anything, right? I need to keep this at a very high level. And I think realizing that there's a level of self-awareness that takes, that we're just coming along with resources and tools. Clients pretty much know what they already want to do. I'm not adding to that equation by any means.
I'm working with a professional architect right now. We're building a new house in the UK. And I want my architect to help me realize my dream. I don't want to pay for him to build his.
Wow. That's a soundbite.
Hey, before you finish listening to this episode, you need to do a couple things. The first thing you need to do is join the free Facebook group. It's free. Why wouldn't you join it? It's full of resources. You got the ability to build your network. I'm always hopping in there with my beautiful mug, saying hello, telling you what's going on, and giving you some extra things to think about. The second thing you need to do is you need to think about joining the Jumpstart Accelerator Group. How can you accelerate your path? How can you jumpstart your financial services career, moving you in the right direction, removing the friction, the frustration, the BS that the industry shows you and tries to make you into a salesperson? If you want the real from a 20-year veteran, and I'm giving you mentorship, and I'm giving you access to trainings, and I'm also giving you an invitation to join us in the professional development program. It is well worth your time and money investment. Would love to see you there, the Jumpstart Accelerator Group. All right, that's enough. Let's get back to the episode.
Because I think professionals, whether we're in finance or any other field, this is a very important realization that the client is the hero of the story, not us.
Right. And you got to check your ego at the door and then humbly go to bed at night being like, my client's a badass.
Yeah.
Right. And your job is to help them with the complex decisions or help bring some of their dreams back to reality, but with a, you know, with a gentle cuddle or a hug around it as well, because you do have to be that voice of reason. Like, I do need my architect to say that you, I understand that's what you want to do, but based on the size of the lot and based on the constraints and based on what you said you wanted to spend, you're not going to finish it right. And then you're not going to love it. Do you want to love it? Or do you want it to look good from the outside? I'm like, I want to love it. He says, well, how about we go this way then? And you're like, thank you. I just made a smart decision because of you. Not you made a smart decision.
Yeah. No, this is all this stuff is great. This is good stuff. I mean, Carl Richards talks about some things with, you know, the major role of a financial planner professional in someone's life is actually to help the person from making big mistakes. That's our major role. Yeah. Obviously the competency has to be there, but I love the term, it's table stakes. You're supposed to have that. Right. The level of competency that it takes to, do all this stuff that software does. I mean, some of that stuff's going to be automated anyway, but can I critically think through strategy with you so that you can spend more time on the podium doing the speaking versus worrying about this yourself and decreasing the quality of your life, by the way, because you're not an expert. It's only going to frustrate you, right?
You said that people are frustrated that they can't do seminars and they, you know, they can't get on the golf course or the country club or they, you know, can't meet at the fancy bar and order the Bordeaux, right? Like, the question I asked to that is, was that stuff what was important anyway? Mm. Or was that just a vehicle that allowed you to get close enough to an individual so you could understand the heart of the objectives? And my belief is it was the latter of the two.
Yeah.
So if you want to say, how do you change in an environment that is changing all around you? My advice is to don't change. Do what was always important. Work on the relationship. Get close enough to understand what's going on in somebody else's head. Now, the second you free it up and you say, well, my goal wasn't to get on the golf course or to get a face-to-face meeting. My goal was to understand really what is keeping my client up at night. How do I think about that situation differently?
Yeah.
And a lot of people have asked me versions of, particularly early stage of the pandemic in 2020, is what's changed in your world? And I said, not a lot. I'm doing what I've always done. They said, well, what's that? I said, well, I'm taking care of my family and I'm helping my clients navigate change. That's what I've always done. And the second that you can even empower yourself to say, well, what are the bigger buckets that I get through? What is it that makes you great? It's not that you got a membership to the golf course or you know a load about wine or that you a badass at a seminar. It's, well, let's take the seminar piece. What have I always done is I've provided expertise for free to answer some of the most critical FAQs that sit in and around my area of expertise that people that matter. And I've invited them to come and experience that advice at minimal friction to themselves. Mm-hmm. How can I keep doing that right now? What would be the best way of continuing to be able to do that? And then what happens in worlds like ours is people say, yeah, but what's the best practice? What's the best practice for doing that? And my take on that is best practices are a complete waste of time. Why? Because they stifle innovation. They're saying, give me the template, the swipe file, give me the secret. And the secret lies in realizing there is no secret. And instead of trying to be your best at something, focus on being better and know that over a period of time, better beats best.
Yeah.
You can be better today than you were yesterday at delivering online presentations around your area of expertise and inviting the right people to the room.
No, this is, yeah, that's so huge. I think there's a lot of, let's just say, cockamamie excuses that financial advisors use about compliance and regulation and all this stuff that they can't do. And that list is so long.
Here's how you think about that stuff. You say, that's awesome. Because if everybody else was good and everybody else was on the money, damn, this would be hard.
Yeah. This is true.
I love it that 90% of every industry is lazy and waiting for it to happen. I don't wish that they're better. Sure. Like they make life easier for me. So I take great joy in the fact that other people are wishing, waiting, hoping, praying for things to be able to change, because that's what created the open water for you to land grab attention, equity, profit, clients, whatever it might be. And this is the moment, right? 2021. If anybody is aged right now between 28 and 50 and looking to build a business, you will not get a better time to land grab attention, to queue jump your authority within your industry than what's existed from March 2020 to the end of this year.
You're right. Can't agree.
And by the time we get to the end of 2021, we're going to set things in stone again in some way. So wherever you're at that point, movement and changing of things is going to be a lot, lot harder. But right now, it's the Wild West.
No, you're right. There's opportunity and chaos, right? What resources would you point a person listening to this podcast to that you feel would have a really great impact on helping them change that narrative if they're stuck in what we just call right now, like this, oh, I wish and I hope and I'm, what can I do? If they're ready to do it afraid, what resource would you point them to?
A few things. My guess is at some point, most of the people listening to this at some point in their life found a journal and wrote some things in about it, about how they saw themselves in the future, what they plan to be, how they decided to tackle certain things. Just dust them off. Mm. Go remember who you used to think you were going to be and just check.
Go dream again, right?
Go check it aligns.
Yeah.
If you can't find that, go grab yourself a blank piece of paper and say, if I was starting again from now, how would I make it look different? And I think permission to play on that blank sheet of paper is cool. I would then be humble enough to reinsert yourself to rookie mode and say, okay, if I am starting again from now, where do I start? And my belief is anybody running a business, and particularly a personal brand business, is to decide you're running two. And that's the business you're running and the business you're growing. What you can then do is you can say, well, I'm going to ring fence this group of clients I've already got. I'm going to keep serving them the way I have done, but guess what? That's not my growth anymore. That's my maintain mode in this group of clients. And I'm going to start a new business today with no clients. And I'm going to get after my future business in this new company. And I'm not even saying you have to create a new tax ID or any of those things. You're just going to draw a line and you're going to say, I got a new company and I'm going to get after building that. And that could be in your niche. This could be an alter ego if you want it to be. That could be, I'm going to build 25 rockstar clients that also do blank, which I love to do, which means that now I can build rapport with those people from a distance because we already have a common interest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to build assets in order to be able to do so. I'm going to create events. Like if you wanted to, like, let's just take my bourbon idea again. If you wanted to build seminars, what if you introduced a new unusual bourbon to every seminar and you got yourself a master distiller or somebody to answer some questions, tell some stories about it, or somebody that could teach everybody to make a killer cocktail during that. Do you think they might show up?
Yeah.
More likely than just for the financial planning advice. So we start to be creative about it. The resources I would be going back to the stuff that worked in the past too.
Okay.
Because we all got lazy. Like if you used to send your clients cards on their birthdays or at key moments in time, or that you recognize key life events. And now you got lazy because LinkedIn told you it's their birthday and you send HBD, right? go back to the stuff that shows that you care as opposed to says that you care.
Yeah.
And lean into resources that can remind you how that this is a human to human business, that this is a, you know, it's got to feel like you've got my back type business. And check in with yourself that you didn't get so far left of your own value system through automation and what's the right way to market. And these are the social platforms I need to be from. And here's my reach. And I need evergreen webinars and yada, yada, yada. And just go back towards saying, how do I execute the basics to a high standard consistently?
Yeah.
Now we're on the money. Yeah. If anyone wants to catch a resource of mine and wants to go back to how to effectively be able to go win business, the greatest piece of or product or anything I've ever created is something very few people know about because it's not a book and it was produced just for Audible.
Oh, Audible
original, how to persuade and get paid.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. Yeah, that was fun. That's an excellent resource. I'm gonna make sure I link that in the show notes because after exactly what to say, that was my next. I was like, who's this Phil Jones guy? The interesting, here's an aside that I love to just throw out. Whenever the author reads the book, there's something different. For a huge Audible consumer like myself, when it can be a really great story, but there's nothing like when the author reads the book. I mean, literally the story can be 6 or 7, but if you have the author reading it, you're like, you get a different feel from that. And right. So when I happened upon your stuff in the Audible store, I was like, okay, here's a guy reading his own stuff. And I like his accent too. Well, this has been great, man. I feel like I can talk to you all day about this, but this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at the next level. In that context, Phil, what word or words of wisdom would you leave with them?
There's one word that I think all of us should do with exploration on. And in the financial planning world, this word is probably even more profound than it is for every other person. And the word is the word enough. Because the general quest that many people run at is one of saying, I want more, I want more, I want more. And I've never met anybody that was on the relentless quest for more for their entire life that was happy with that decision. Yet the ability to define what enough is for both yourself and your clients is something that could be a masterstroke on all levels.
Wow.
Big question.
It is. You didn't know this about me. Maybe you did. You had to do some really good Google research for this. But when I first started my firm, I was coined off this phrase that is actually a scriptural or biblical reference about where your treasure is, your heart will be also. And obviously there's the saying that you put your money where your mouth is. I was like, well, actually people put their money where their heart is. And so I had come up with this concept of financial contentment.
Yep.
Which is reverse from what our society teaches, which is what you just said. But at the end of the day, I've never saw a hearse being trailed by a Brinks truck or anything like that. You can't take it with you.
Right. And if you're trying to beat your ego, you're always going to lose.
Mm. So true.
Whereas if you're brave enough to be able to say, I'm good. My dad said something to me once, a long time ago. My dad is a self-employed builder, a self-made man, but you know, lives a very good life, but has never been attracted by rapid growth and big things, etc. And I remember him saying to me when, like, I think I was 17 or 18 years of age, I remember saying to dad, you know, like, what are your goals in life? What are you, you know, looking to try and achieve? And I was very goal orientated. I've always been goal orientated. And my dad said, my goal is to always be content.
Mm.
And at the time I never understood it. But today I think it's kind of profound.
Yeah, it is. In a world with all this noise, that's a really good signal to hone in on.
It right. is. Huge. And see how it changes the financial plan that you could create for your client. It's like, you know, you want to go to Mars or do you want to go to like Chicago? And if the goal is putting the client's needs first, is exploring those questions with them, not how do I, you know, make your money bring the biggest return? How do we feed more in? How do we make you pay less tax? Like actually, where's the destination that we're looking to try and get to, and how much is enough? I'm going to add one more comment because I don't get to talk on these podcasts in a too often moment, but chatting with senior family friend, somebody we're close to, she's done everything she's supposed to do in her financial planning all her entire life. She's in her late 60s right now. And she has no idea whether she can retire or not. And I know for a fact that she got three times more than she needs, even if she lives to 150. But the trouble is because nobody spent the time to say, how much is enough? Where is the line? Like, when can we start to actually shift the focus into enjoying as opposed to ring fencing and protecting? That what happens is the financial advice is actually constrained rather than released.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's the reason why I'm so passionate about what I'm doing now, because essentially these type of conversations, this type of perspective is what the next generation of financial advisors and professionals need to know, so that we won't have any more, you know, people in their 60s thinking that way, right? It's essentially the elephant that's on the chain that can just break away if they could, if they wanted to, but they've been in bondage so long under a mindset.
People that need quality financial advice right now are currently in their 20s, they're in their 30s, they're in their 40s. Let's not believe that everybody that is under the age of 35 has no funds to invest, or that they're a crazy millennial that hasn't got their life figured out, et cetera, right? I'm 39 years of age right now, thinking about semi-retirement, right? And there are lots of people that are like that, thinking, how do they go about sustaining a life long into the future? And I think that now that the world hasn't seen a career in its traditional capacity of you learn a profession, you go into that job, you do that till you decide you don't want to work anymore 30 plus years on, the need for the next level of financial advisors, the next generation of financial advisors to be more agile with what they think about normal is again a chance to land grab. And a final thought that goes into me and my choosing of any professionals in my life is I don't want to hire a gray beard because I don't want to hire them twice.
That's a good point. You're right.
Right. I want somebody who's on my journey with me. I don't mind them being a few paces ahead, but I don't want them being one or two generations ahead.
This is a good point. No, it reminds me of a saying that I use that I stole from somebody, but in the US at least, the profession is way too stale, pale, and male.
Right,
it just is
just financial planning or others too.
that's a whole nother podcast, my friend. We'll have to have you back for that. Well, this has been great. I really appreciate your time and your perspective, man. It's been really refreshing.
Huge pleasure.
And affirming in a lot of ways. I hope that people are, like, you know, scribbling down notes, and we'll listen to this over and over again. Great to have you, man. Have a great, great, awesome 2021, man.
You too, my man. Thank you for having me.
All right, great. Take care.